people, you know, standing up to the SQ, like who even called in?
This is Radio Freethinker, and we're going to start the show this week with a song by XTC called Dear God.
Dear God, hope you got the letter, and I pray you can make it better down here. I don't mean a big reduction in the price of beer, but all the people that you made in your image, see them starving on their feet, 'cause they don't get enough to eat from God. Can't believe in you.
Dear God, sorry to disturb you, but I feel that I should be a lot unclear. We all need a big reduction in amount of tears. All the people that you made in your image, see them fighting in the street, 'cause they can't make opinions meet about God. I can't believe in you. Did you make disease and the diamond
Welcome back, everybody. That was a powerful stuff by XTC. So, my name is Elon Dubrovsky. I'm the host of Radio Freethinker, and with me again is my distinguished panel, starting with Ethan.
Hey, everybody.
Rob.
Hi.
And Don.
Howdy.
So, guys, we got an email.
Woohoo!
Our first email to radio.freethinker@gmail.com. You could be the next person to have your email read, but today, Rob is going to start our show by reading our first ever email. Go ahead, Rob.
So this is from heartsaidshapedmoon@gmail.com, and it starts off with listening to both your shows via podcast. Kudos. Thank you, heart-shaped.
And, thank you.
Here's the question. In the interview with James Randi, he very clearly states his points of view on the paranormal and related topics. He even offers $1 million to someone who can prove it. I would like to know how each of you feel on this topic. Do you agree with him? And if so, why? What are you basing your decision on? What proof do you have that it is all made up? There are a lot of people out there that claim to be something they are not, and there are a lot of scam artists but no one can base their entire decision on the popular choice. And any that are real are certainly not going to come forward and step into the limelight to be tested at every turn and every bump, to be called a freak, to be looked down upon in society. After all, they did burn witches at the stake, and that is what they could be called if they prove they could do what millions of others claim to do and pull off with trickery. That is my view on it. Let's hear yours.
Okay, well, I'd like, maybe if I could start by responding. I think that there were two main points in that email. First, it's sort of like, the first point is, what proof do we have that it's all made up? So I guess what you're saying is, like, if, like, we, maybe there might not be proof that it, that these paranormal activities exist, but is there proof that they don't exist?
Well, you can't really prove a negative like that, because you'd have to, you go by the assumption that if someone had these powers, they would manifest themselves naturally. You would assume that if there was a population out there that had psychic powers, it would come out. They would win the lottery a few more times. It would be demonstrable. But I don't think the burden of proof is on us. I think the burden of proof is on the person making the claim.
So I think the idea behind the JREF's Million Dollar Challenge is exactly this sort of test. It's a bait, if you will, for people who claim they have paranormal powers or they're psychic or something like that to come in and actually prove it, that they have these powers.
I think it's actually kind of funny, too, that she says that they don't want to come out and they don't want to say anything, you know, because they might be burned, like people accused of being witches, because let's not remember there are no real witches unless you're into the religion. But the people who were claiming or targeted by this are people who are out there making millions of dollars on TV shows claiming to be psychic readers or whatever. I mean, they don't seem to have a problem with saying they have these abilities. They just seem to have a problem trying to prove, at least in a verifiable or scientific way, that they can actually do it. Another thing, too, I thought was interesting in the letter, she has this one thing where she says, at every twist and turn, they have to try and prove themselves. I forget the exact wording, but it was like, they have to do it all the time. No, they just have to do it once. Do it once. We'd be happy if you could do it once. Proving it scientifically.
In fact, they have to do it with the conditions on the experiment that they themselves set up and agree upon with the JREF. So the conditions couldn't be any better. Yet no one has claimed the million-dollar prize. No one's proven that they have any paranormal powers.
And the thing is, when they go on these talk shows, they're never vetted in any way. They don't have to prove anything. They're brought on to these daytime talk shows and Larry King, and there's no skeptical scrutiny of them. They just assume, oh, Sylvia Brown must be psychic.
And people start asking, so Sylvia, what's my guardian angel's name? And then she'll say, it's Philip. And then, you know,
completely unfalsifiable claims.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, can you prove it otherwise?
I think that also in the second part of the email, the thing about the burning the witches and the like, I think this is an example of a logical fallacy called special pleading, where basically what she's saying is, like, we don't have the evidence, except if we did bring the evidence, then, you know, we could be harmed. So we need sort of a special sort of treatment. And, like, for this specific claim, you shouldn't, like, require the same amount of evidence that any other claim would require.
Yeah, basically saying that we don't have to hold ourselves up to the same level of scientific scrutiny that any other claim would require.
And really, when they say something like, what proof do you have that it's all made up? Well, I mean, we do have quite a lot of scientific proof and quite a lot of evidence that goes towards what are things that humans are capable of. Like, basically, we've been running these experiments since the beginning of science, right? We know that we have our five senses. But anyways, there's a lot of evidence that shows that, like, paranormal things are not one of the main features of the human condition.
You also get into the idea, too, that, I mean, how many people have come forward and say, I have this great psychic ability. And when they are tested, because some of them actually do go forward and they do get tested, they are shown to be frauds. I mean, we have so many instances where when we have tried to verify it, it has turned out to be fraud. And we've had none that have been verified.
Right.
I mean, again, it's...
A lot of paranormal abilities are well-documented conjuring tricks. There are books and experts like James Randi and Ian Rowland, an expert on cold reading, that have written books and treatises and give lectures on exactly how psychics and mediums accomplish these feats. I mean, people have been debunking psychics for centuries. Houdini made a career out of it. It's really, really difficult, it seems, to find someone who claims they're a psychic that isn't actually
just cheating.
And also, the thing is also that it's not that James Randi is saying he doesn't believe in psychics necessarily. Like, you'll see, I think either he said it in last week's part of the interview or he'll say it in this part that we're going to play today. But basically he says, I don't not believe in psychics. I'm just saying that if you do have psychic powers, come and prove it and we'll give you $1 million. So, you know, like, the whole skeptic community isn't about just, like, you know, being closed-minded and saying, no, there's no possible chance. Like, if we're presented with evidence that clearly shows under proper scientific conditions and repeatable, you know, all of the things that a good scientific study needs to show that, like, these things exist, then, you know, there you go. But right as of now, like, you know, we haven't seen any proof, and James Randi's with his challenge is just trying to get people that if they do have the powers to show it.
How many years has he had this award open?
Oh, I don't know.
He started off with it just $1,000 out of his own pocket, I think. He's been appearing on TV since the 70s. He probably started it around
It started
the
70s. At $10,000. But anyways, I guess that's getting a little off track. So if you want to write us an email and have your email read on the air, email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And Daniel, can you take us to a commercial break, please?
Welcome to the show. You're listening to 101.9 FM. This is CITR, the Morning After Show. My name is Osvaldo Perez.
Van Music and CITR presents the 10th anniversary of the Morning After Show on April 10th at the Legion on Commercial Drive, 2205 Commercial Drive. Doors open at 2 p.m. There'll be 11 bands. $10 advance tickets can be bought at High Life Records on Commercial Drive or through vanmusic.ca. You can also phone 778-862-1577. Playing at the show is Los Furios, Hawaiian Bibles, Los Malos, The Get Down, Michelle Carter-Lees, Sinister Black, The Rain in the Sidewalk, Tom Girl, Jess Hill, Mac Hunter, and the Aching Heart Foundation. It's April 10th at the Legion on Commercial Drive. Be part of the movement.
Morning After Show, every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. You can listen at www.citr.ca or at 101.9 FM. The Morning After Show, 10 years playing your future favorite song.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Freethinker. Remember, you could email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. Anyways, so guys, happy Passover. Tomorrow is the first day of the Jewish festival of Passover.
Whoa. What's Passover?
Well, Passover is a Jewish holiday, and they celebrate the Exodus from Egypt, which is talked about in the Bible. That story is a pretty popular story. There's been movies such as The Ten Commandments or a recent Disney movie called The Prince of Egypt. And what I'd like to do right now is rain on people's parade and go over, like, let's ask the question, did this Exodus from Egypt that everyone is celebrating, did it actually really happen? And so I've done some research, and this is even kind of different than the psychics thing, because not only is there no evidence that it did happen, but there's also quite a lot of evidence that shows that it most likely didn't happen. And so we're going to look at it from three angles, through chronology, anthropology, and archaeology. So let's start with chronology. So basically, let's look at the dates that this is supposed to have happened. So if you look in the Bible, it says in Kings chapter 6, verse 1, it says that the Exodus took place 480 years before the temple construction commenced. And we know that the temple construction commenced in 970 BCE, so that puts the Exodus at the year 1447 before the Common Era. So compare that now to in the Exodus story of the Exodus from Egypt, it says that the children of Israel were being used as slaves to build the city of Ramses. But Ramses only came to power in 1320, before the Common Era. So that means that the Exodus happened before the person who they were building cities for came into power. So
it's a lot of cherry picking is what it is. They've taken these sort of really vague dates out of the Bible that you can't really verify.
Which version of the Bible?
Well, exactly. They're not verifiable dates. And then they try to plug them into Egyptian history, which is pretty well documented. And they go, well, this event in Egyptian history is kind of like the Bible story, so let's plug that in there. But, you know, you'll get about three different interpretations about 1,000 years apart. And it's really difficult to make any kind of clear statement here.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here today just to spice things up a little bit. Bible, let's say it's a legend. But, I mean, all legends, people say, have a root of truth. So let's say that they, I mean, it says Methuselah was 800 years old. No one thinks he was 800 years old. So what about that? Was there any other kind of evidence that we could use besides chronology? Let's say they screwed up in the chronology. It doesn't mean it's not true.
Right. Maybe by itself, that's not really evidence that the Exodus didn't happen. Because as Ethan is saying, maybe the dates are sort of messed up. And also, you know, there's a whole issue of how many years is a year or how long is an actual year in the Bible. Maybe they're using a lunar calendar. Okay, so let's move on to archaeology now. So let's put this into context. The Bible says that 600 men left Egypt. So if we figure in women and children, let's say somewhere around 1.5 million people.
6,000. You said
600,000.
600,000.
Right. Okay. So that 1.5 million Israelites left Egypt. So that's more people than currently exist in any major most major U.S. cities. So, okay. Now that we're archaeology right now, there's satellite imagery and ground penetrating radar, and these techniques are being used by archaeologists to trace even the most meager remains of hunter gatherers and pastoral nomads all over the world. They found amazing finds. So it's quite puzzling that they haven't been able to find. Finds from a group of over 1.5 million people who were wandering around the desert for 40 years, according to the story. The archaeologists can't find their camps. Huge groups of people would have left behind large amounts of campfire remains, broken pottery.
You also got
unless all of it was washed away by a great flood.
Well, according to the Bible, that happened before the Exodus story, Rob.
But chronology can be wrong.
Well, the thing is that with logistics, you'd think that, you know, 1.5 million people wandering around would be noticed by the other powers in the Middle East or other tribes or other outposts. Egyptian power at this point in history is very, very large. It's very unlikely that 1.5 million people could disappear.
Right. Well, actually,
not even to mention, too, I mean, the logistics of it. I mean, if you assume there might have been some divine hand, which obviously they have to assume is happening, people leave stuff around.
That's basically how all of archaeological finds are found. It's basically people's garbage are later treasures by archaeologists that they could use to learn about what these people used to live like. But Ethan brings up a good point also. So getting more onto the anthropology side of it is why wasn't this story noticed? Like, this is a very well-documented story in the Bible, except we have lots of other evidence of what was going on in Egypt from other sources. So there's these Armana letters, which are an archive of correspondences between Egypt and Canaan, which is actually the country where the Israelites were supposedly went to. And so these letters describe in great detail social, religious, political, military, demographic conditions. Like, it describes a lot of things that was going on in the desert and in their countries. And yet there's no mention at all of Israel. Like, they even mention a lot of different ethnic groups that were around at the time, but yet no mention of Israelites or Israel.
You'd think some enterprising young Egyptian would have noted down in their diary, "Today the water turned into blood. It was very strange."
Even bad news, the Egyptians have a good history of being able to take bad news and turning it into good news, but they still mention it. I mean, they're historically, they had a great battle against, I think it was the Syrians or the Hittites, and they lost miserably. But the king came back, said, "We had this battle, and we won." But they still mention the battle. So even if it's a bad point in Egyptian history, they'd still mention it.
Right, and plus there's more to the story than just the bad point. What about all of those years of having all of these slaves, like 600,000 men as slaves? You know, you think that would have maybe been something noteworthy. Like, the Egyptians are actually pretty well known for having been careful note takers of everything that was going on. There's also these papyrus records that were found in the late 13th century, and it shows, and they talk about things like different forts and sort of like different sort of transactions that were going on and like very, very mundane things sort of that were going on every day. So you think like some of these stories, some of these plagues or the slaves might have been mentioned.
Yeah, so the Egyptian records go into far more detail than the Bible ever could. And it's important to note that the Bible wasn't written by one guy as the unaltered word of God. It was written by many different people over many different years and has been edited and passed down over centuries. So it's probably full of inaccuracies and vague statements and lots of stuff that's just plain wrong.
That also brings up, too, one of the things that I noticed in some of my research is the actual language that's used to describe the Exodus story and how if it's an event that is supposed to have happened around 1500 BC or whatever, the dates, the information, the cities, the people are all like 800, 600 BC. It's like as if it was written at a later date as a story to inspire people.
So basically, in conclusion, we've got the chronology is wrong, the dates don't match up, there's no archaeological evidence, and also the anthropological evidence really points to the idea that this probably didn't happen. So keep that in mind as you're enjoying your Passover Seders tonight. Daniel, can you take us to another commercial, please? I think it's commercial time.
Well, On May 12, 2009, British Columbians will again be voting on whether to adopt the new voting system recommended by the BC Citizens Assembly on Electoral Reform, BCSTV. BCSTV is a more representative system in which elected representatives accurately reflect and are accountable to the will of voters. If you're interested in helping the campaign to bring fairer voting to BC, you can email us at fairvoteubc@gmail.com or visit the campaign website for more information at stv.ca. A message from the UBC Fair Vote Club.
And up next, we got a little bit of heat hit for you. A heat hit. I have no idea what that is. But this is from the Mixdown.
You are now listening
to CITR
101.9 FM Vancouver.
Oh, hello. Welcome back to Radio Freethinker. So, thank you again for listening. Please remember that you could email us any questions or comments at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. Maybe you have an opinion about the Passover discussion we just had. And speaking of the Passover discussion, next week we're going to be having part two of our Passover discussion where we're going to be talking about the morality of the Passover story. But first, let's go to the final part of our James Randi interview. We've already done we've shown the first two parts from the last 2 weeks, and now we're going to go into the final part of the interview. So if you could set that up for us, Daniel, that'd be awesome.
Elsewhere in the media, Richard Dawkins just recently helped launch a campaign of bus ads with an atheist message. There's probably no God, so stop worrying and get on with your life. What do you think of these bus ads?
Well, Richard doesn't like the word probably put in there. Yeah. So I think it's advisable to leave it in there because we can't prove there is no God any more than we can prove there is no blue unicorn in South Africa someplace. I can indicate to you that it's not very likely there's a blue unicorn or a God, but nonetheless, I can't prove to you that that's a negative. It simply cannot prove. You cannot establish it. So, I think that would be something that would be that I would very much like to see on buses and skywriting and all over the place here in the United States of America as well as in Canada. But I don't think that's very likely to happen, unfortunately. I found out that my homeland, which is Canada, though I'm an American citizen now for various reasons, I found that Canada is increasingly coming under the spell of superstition. I meant to say religion, but it's the same thing, so yes. You can interpret.
So with the new administration in the American government, do you think the climate for science and skepticism will improve in the United States and perhaps in Canada, or do you think it's all just politics?
Well, the last administration we had, you may remember, a fellow named, what was his name? Bush. Oh, yes, I seem to recall. This was a science-bashing administration. They didn't ever defend science. They didn't endorse it. They thought that that was a work of the devil. And Bush is just medieval in his thinking, or was, and probably still is, I'm sure. He and Cheney are the worst combination that could have ever walked into the White House. I am so in exaltation of our present situation here because our new president, Barack Obama, has made statements to the effect that he's going to encourage the pursuit of science and such. Well, some people point out to me that he's a religious man. Yes, okay. But I don't know if he is. All I know is that he has to give that impression because he could never have been elected if he had not endorsed God and Jesus and the whole mythology. We know in this country, at this present state, unfortunately, of politics, every politician has to be a theist, at least, if not a religious person, or they simply can't run for office and they certainly can't win any election in the United States of America. I think that's a great shame. I found it very, very pervasive in Canada as well, and I'm rather disappointed to see that.
Yeah. So it seems as if most people believe they can only live a moral life through some sort of religion. Where would an atheist or a skeptic get their moral values?
From common sense. It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Common sense, yeah. It's a lot better if folks are nice to one another and cooperative and genuinely honest with one another. You get a lot more done, and it's just a better way of life altogether. It's practical, and it's a good way of doing business, I think. I try to do things that way. I try to run my life that way. And people say, and I've been asked this question many times, and I'm so insulted by it. And they say, but if you don't believe in hell and the fact that you will just die and go to hell, if you don't believe in that and that you'll be punished if you aren't religious, why would you do anything moral? Because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Spike Lee. Spike Lee is a better philosopher than these people.
It's true, true.
There's actually a lot of research, like scientific research, that explains, you know, with the evolutionary explanation why humans cooperate and why we tend to be good. Like,
yeah.
You don't even need to have supernatural explanations or even things like saying that's, you know.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
So, just a sort of more personal question here. Coming from a background of magic myself, I came into skepticism through magic. Was studying magic a factor in your interest in science and skepticism?
Well, if I may rephrase your question this way. You're not talking about magic, because magic is the control of nature and the subversion of nature for your own ends, to change the nature of the real world. We don't do that as magicians. We actually should be referred to as conjurers. And the definition of a conjurer, the most common one, is someone who approximates the effect and ability of a real magician who could change and control nature. And you don't claim to do that, I'm sure, and nor do I claim to do it. And I don't know of many magicians who do. But there are some scallywags out there who do that sort of thing, as we all know. And some of them are named Uri Geller and some aren't. We are not controlling nature. We are magicians for purposes of entertainment. I think you'll agree with that, too.
I agree, definitely.
Maybe for our listeners, can you tell us who Uri Geller is and why you found it really important to expose him as a charlatan?
Well, first of all, it's Uri Geller, not Uri Geller. Uri is the Russian equivalent of Uri. Oh. That's U-R-I, which in his tongue apparently means light. Though I'm trying to get a connection with darkness, but I can't seem to find one. In any case, Uri Geller is a magician who found out that if he claimed to have genuine psychic and magical powers, that he would make a lot more money than working kids' birthday parties and pulling rabbits out of hats. And that's very true. Oh, yes, you can make a lot of money doing that, but that means that you have to lie to your customers, and you have to deceive them and treat them like idiots. Some of them deserve to be treated that way, but I don't want to do that, and I refuse to do that. And most honest magicians, conjurers, if you will, do that. They tell people, these are tricks. I hope that you're amused by them. But they don't claim that they really can materialize a rabbit out of nowhere, or they're insulting the intelligence of their audiences, I would think, unless they're under 8 years of age.
I remember seeing Geller on Johnny Carson, and he put him on the spot, asking him to bend some spoons and such, and he was completely unable to do that. It was just awesome. And I was just wondering, was he a big skeptic and fan of critical thinking?
Oh, yes. I knew Carson rather well, aside from being on the program, 23 or 24 times, I've forgotten how many times, over the years. And Johnny was very honest about this, and he was very angry at these so-called psychics and whatnot. He did everything he could to fight them, and he did so very effectively. But, you know, when we exposed Peter Popoff on the program, he was the evangelist who said he was healing people, and he was actually using a hidden receiver in his ear, and his wife was backstage cooing him as to what the people were talking about and whatnot. we blew that out of the water, and he went out of business, that is, for a couple of months, and came right back in again. Mm. And John would call me on the phone and say, I just saw Popoff on television. He's back in business. And I had to assure him, John, that these are the unsinkable rubber ducks. People don't listen to what you say. And no matter how effective your program was, and it was very effective in showing that Papa was a liar and a cheat and a fake. It was proven beyond any shadow of a doubt. People don't listen because they want the fantasy rather than the truth. The truth is an ugly thing to them, and they would rather have the fantasy.
So, as we're nearing the end of our interview time, what's the one question you...
Question, sorry.
You wish you were asked more often in interviews.
This is our cheap way of getting a cool question.
Well, I'm still waiting to hear from a rich widow, but that's another matter already. No, I'm asked the right questions usually, and you fellows have done a good job, and I thank you for that. There are many things that can be asked about my profession and about the way I conduct myself, but I will just sum it up for you, if I may. We try to get people thinking. We try to get them thinking. We don't tell them what to think, because that's not the healthy way to do it. We've got to get them thinking themselves so that they can originate thoughts on their own and they can start to question what they're being told all the time by the media. Remember, the media is in this sort of thing because they make a lot of money doing it. They don't really care about truth and about integrity and these things. All they care is, will people buy the product that they're selling? And you've got to bear that in mind all the time. That doesn't mean they're always lying. No, not at all. But such things as in the United States here, the Education Channel has nothing to do with education. And the Discovery Channel has nothing to do with genuine discovery of real wonders of nature and of the world. They're all woo-woo. And they use that title in order to confound people and to mislead them into thinking that maybe they'll actually find out something on this program. It's shameful, but it's the result of the system that we use to conduct our media, that is, regulate our media, and that includes the newspapers and magazines as well, of course. I think it's a great shame. So the James Randi Educational Foundation does its best to try, at least try, to bring these things into better perspective.
Well, thank you for those words of wisdom and for enlightening our audience about skepticism and what the JREF does.
Yeah, a lot of people from our club are very excited that you were giving us an interview to put on our show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited to have been here. I had a great visit at UBC and very, very fruitful one in all ways. I enjoyed it 100%. And I hope to be asked back again one of these days.
Well, we definitely want to thank James Randi for giving us that interview. That was very exciting for us.
And I definitely want to stop saying so the next time I interview somebody.
And saying questions. Anyway, that's the end of our show. We're over time. Oh, my goodness. But thanks, everyone, for listening. Check us out. Check out our blog at freethinkers.ubc.blog. Freethinkers, ubcfreethinkers.blogspot.com. I think that's it. Search for us on Google. Anyways.
Google it, yeah.
You also could email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. I better stop. This is a mess now. But let's stop the episode with a quote from Ethan, who's gonna take us out.
Okay, so this quote is by George Bernard Shaw. And the fact that a believer is happier than a skeptic is no more to the point than the fact that a drunken man is happier than a sober one.
Oh, that guy. Okay, well, that's it for our show. So goodbye from me, Elon.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Listen next week.
Music Waste 2009 is now accepting submissions. This year's festival runs June 10th.